You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today, I originally planned to have two stories. I really don't think I'm going to have time to really go into detail on two stories, but I will at least give you the highlight of the story, because that I'll cover really briefly up front. And that's the fact that the NSA, the National Security Agency, as well as Ed Snowden, were in the news. And what has come out, apparently what Ed Snowden did to really get a hold of over 1.7, listen to this number, 1.7 million files, and these are restricted files, most of them are classified top secret or above, was he used some very common software that's available online and to search for specific files. And they're called web crawler and web scraper software. And you can actually buy some of this, and some developers actually code it. He's not a coder. He's a hardware guy, a systems guy. So he would have to buy or got a hold of free online some software. And what it enables you to do, what a web crawler does, it searches out links, and it'll go to a page. And I do this the same thing when I'm preparing the show. What I will do is go to a website. I first will go to a search engine, or such as Google, or I'll go to YouTube if I'm looking for a video, and type in certain keywords of the stories that I might be interested in. For example, yesterday, by accident, I saw this on Drudge Report and started to dig into it, because most people don't know what a web crawler is or a web scraper. I'm not going to get into technical details. But what amazed me initially was, how did he get hold of all these documents, and why weren't any alarms set off? And the answer to that question is very simple. He was not at the National Security Agency's headquarters. They're in Fort Meade, Maryland. Apparently, they upgraded their software there, and had he done what he did in Hawaii there, he would have probably got caught. In other words, there would have alarms would have been set off. People would have come to his desk and asked him some questions as to why are you looking at these documents. And what a web crawler does is give you a long list of, it'll go to a page, look for the links on the page, list them, put them in a list or an array of links, and then follow the links. You know, for example, let's say you put Ed Snowden in on YouTube. You'll get a listing of videos on Ed Snowden. Now, what I think Ed Snowden did is he obviously had to have some keywords, and he was looking for example, one I would use would be data mining, intelligence, surveillance, American people, applications, and this is just strictly off the top of my head. Now, he probably gave it a lot more thought. The problem is this. If you put too many keywords in, you're just going to get overflowing with documents to look at. It's too inclusive. So you want to be, you narrow it down. And that's, if you're doing this manually using some software, you can do it. But most of these web crawlers are automatic. You just launch it, probably from a flash drive is what I suspect. He launched this, and it went to the NSA systems, various directories, and looked for documents that met the specifications of the keywords, and then started to open up these documents and get listings of the various links. And then for each link, it would go to the next, think of it a website or a web page, it would go to the next page, if you will, or document, and get a further listing of all the links, and continue on to eventually you'll get very specific as to what you're looking for. But the problem is you can either get too much information or too little information. If you really specify the keywords very tightly, you might only get one document. Conversely, if you specify the keywords very broadly or in general terms, you'll get too many. So you need to fine-tune and really have some practice in how to use a web crawler. But here's the thing. Most of them are automated. You don't need to do this. What a lot of people do is I do this manually. But I'm the reason I do it manually, I want to read it. And because I can quickly determine by either listening to a YouTube video or reading the article that it's not relevant. But if it does have links that I think are relevant, I will follow them, because I was preparing another story, which I'll spend most of the time on a little bit later, and I was getting rather specific information, both YouTube and articles and charts and images. And that's what you need to understand. So apparently he was using off-the-shelf software, both a web crawler and a web scraper. What a scraper does, as the name sort of implies, it gets all the information that's on the page. And this is automated. Now, what I do when I prepare my notes for this show, and for those that are first-time listeners, the way you listen to this show as well as view my notes is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, P-R-O-N-K. Pops, P-O-P-S, dot WordPress.com. And what I'll do is, at the very top, I'll have links for this show. So today's show I'm actually recording now. And when the show's over, I will save the file. I will do some editing, because I like to cut it down to have a very, very tight show. So occasionally I will have some pauses. So I try to minimize the pauses. And occasionally I'll say, not that often, but I do say it. So I try to somewhat clean it up and tighten it in terms of the time. And when I'm shooting for a 3-hour show, in my mind is 126 minutes, which means I normally would have maybe 150 or 155 minutes. I'll edit it down. I'll take the music in the beginning at the end of the show out and try to tighten up the conversation so I don't have any long pauses. As a result, I'll get a 3-hour show. I'll do 2 hours, roughly, a little over 2 hours or 2.5 hours. I play it by ear, and that translates into about 2 hours and 26 minutes, which is the equivalent of a 3-hour talk show, because most talk shows have commercials, and when you factor those out, and that's usually about 18 minutes with 6 minutes at the top, 6 minutes at the top of the hour, 6 minutes at the bottom of the hour, and 3 minutes in the quarter hour. So you add all those up is 18 minutes, subtracted from 60, it's 42 minutes. So, for example, if you're doing a 3-hour talk show, which many people do, that's 126 minutes. So, for example, on my Friday show, that's more or less what I got it down to. I forget the exact time, but it was a little over 125, 26 minutes. I started with about 154 or 5. After I delete it, the first thing I do is delete the music in the beginning and the end, and then go through it, listen to it. And the reason I do that, I want to see, does the show hold together? Where can I improve? Where can I not? Where am I doing well? Am I having some, I call it verbal issues, in the sense of, there's common phrases that people say. One is, and you know, I don't say that often. Another word is basically. You'll hear people say basically, basically, basically. Another one I sort of have a nasty habit of, and I leave it in just to remind me to try to delete it. And I've seen this fairly widespread, is they'll say the word so, or basically, I'm exaggerating here. I'll leave these in. But that's what I'm deleting out, because I'm trying to get the show very, very tight, because I do have the luxury, because I'm not going over the air. I am going over the air right now. But most of my audience, the overwhelming majority of my audience, about 99.99999%, listen to me via podcast. What they normally do is they go to a search engine such as Google, type in certain keywords, and guess what? My link comes up. And then they click on it and listen to the show. I don't know how long they listen. All I know is they came to the site. I don't have that visibility, but I'm not really concerned about that. What I'm doing right now is practice, practice, practice. I'm trying to get better, better, and better. And for example, today's the Richland Chronicle newspaper came out. We were celebrating Vote Valentine's Day a little bit late, but also the 50 years of the Beatles on The Ed Sullivan's Show, and I actually watched that show because my mother and father were big fans of Ed Sullivan. So Sunday nights, I believe it was at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, usually my mother and father would watch The Ed Sullivan Show, and I watched it. It was in black and white, and I remember watching the Beatles when they were first on that show, and that more or less launched them into the United States, and we had Beatlemania. And that was in 1964. I was a lot younger then, at least 50 years younger. So I'm getting up there. But so what Ed Snowden was doing is using software that anyone can buy, and crawl, and search engines do this, because the big users of this are people that are searching for specific types of information. They could be, for example, looking for leads. There are a lot of applications of this, but you're usually searching for certain type of pages. So if you have a very narrow interest, you type in some keywords, you can launch this and it can automatically come back to you with pages to go to. And if you add the scraper technology, and some of them are definitely together, you'll get copies of it. And what you got to keep in mind, websites are continually update. I update my post all the time with additional information. Usually when I'm preparing it, I'm doing continually updating it. Usually I first get it to a state that I think it's more or less complete, let's say 95% plus, and then later on if I get some additional information, I'll add it. So websites are being updated. So when you have this software, you capture it, and it's not just updated, information is being deleted. So one of the advantages of a scraper is you, to the extent you store it in your own system, you have copies of older website in terms of the content. Now what search engines do, they're looking for updates to the site. So if a site has been updated, it's going to scrape that information and see what exactly has changed. And what I use WordPress, one of the things that happens, occasionally it'll do an automatic save, and I had, for various reasons, I might leave or shut down the computer. They will tell me, you have a auto save that's more current. I look at it, and they'll tell me, what in green usually, what has changed. And that's just for my information, but it's important. What Ed Snowden did was use this rather inexpensive software to gather, while he was working, on some other stuff, this web crawler together with the web scraper software was downloading this information. Now, according to the National Security Agency, or at least people that work there, he was working in a contractor's office, Booz Hamilton, and they were the last to get the upgrade. Obviously, somebody has to be last. When you have a big operation like this, you roll it out, you put it out. Clearly to me, you want to make sure the headquarters is the most secure, and that's what they did. But apparently, the Hawaii office of Booz Hamilton was last, and they hadn't gotten it. And actually, from the stories as I was reading, he was caught, but It wasn't tightly monitored. If they had the supposedly, according to the NSA, if they had that upgrade in software, he would have been caught before the damage was done. Well, that's sort of shutting the barn door after the horses and cattle and whatever. In this case, according to congressional testimony that the NSA presented to Congress in a closed session, that some of it's leaked out, that over 1.7 million restricted national security files were downloaded by Edward Snowden. And they have to assume the worst case. Now, I'm a little suspicious of it. Usually when you download something like this, professional security standards, you should have a log as to who's doing this. And I assume they do. I don't know. But it was clear that after the fact, they could go back and determine that he really got not only a lot of documents, a lot of sensitive documents that really he had no business either downloading or getting his hands on, but he did. You know, one of the things that's been revealed so far in the Washington Post and the Guardian and United Kingdom and other papers, I believe the New York Times as well, is the fact that there was a so-called program called PRISM, which was collecting information on the American people's, all their email, all their videos, all their photographs, telephone conversations, conferencing calls, text messaging, you name it, they got a copy of the content, not just the metadata. Now, metadata is very, very important because, and sometimes it's more important really than the content themselves, because it gives you a clear, if you follow, who are these people networking with? You know, for example, if you looked at me, I post to WordPress regularly every day, or almost every day. That would be one entity that I'm doing a lot of interaction with. The other is Podomatic. That's where I put this show up, and it's stored. Now, I also have regular transactions with the company I'm leasing the car with, electrical bills, insurance bills. It's rather routine. And see, that's the problem. And that's my biggest problem with the National Security Agency. Time, money, and resources are scarce. And by collecting all this information and storing, even though the price of storage has dramatically fallen, you're just building bigger and bigger haystacks, multiple haystacks, because they're not doing it just targeting the American people. They're targeting the whole world. So this is just going to grow, and grow. And most of those people, American people and abroad, are entirely law-abiding, innocent. They really shouldn't be a target. They shouldn't be a target, nor should they be on any watch list. And by law, they're breaking the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution in terms of unreasonable searches, and that's what they're doing. They are intercepting this information, and I'm using the intercept word in a broad sense. All this information goes over fiber optic wire and their technologies that enable the national security to divert a copy of all that information that's going over both the telephone exchanges as well as fiber optic wire. And as a result, they're getting all that information and they're storing it at huge data centers in Bluffdale, Utah. What Snowden did was really turn this against the NSA. He decided to, obviously he could not get all the NSA documents, but he used simple software that's readily available to search the NSA databases and files and get links to relevant documents, and then scraped it, a better way to say, it's a copy of that page, and then stored it on the flash drive that he was using, or that's one way to get it, or later on to copy it at another location. I don't know how he did it. The testimony is that he used this software to get the information, and he wasn't, see, if you think about it, it would be all physically impossible for Snowden to manually do this. This was an automated process, just like the collection of all the Americans' peoples is an automated process. There's very little, if any, human interface. Now, to set it up, obviously there is human interface, but once the process is going and the information is diverted and it's stored on this, there's software to access it. The problem I have there, that most of the information that they have is useless to them. And it's important to understand they're not reading, with few exceptions, they're not reading your email or watching the videos and all. They don't have time to, because their major job is to target true enemies of the United States. Now, here's the problem, and here's a point that a lot of people miss, and I've heard this over and over again, and I'll move on to the next story. Let's say they want to target you for political reasons. Let's say we get a president or administration that doesn't care what the laws are. They, for all practical purposes, what they're doing, they're breaking the law. They're going beyond the law. It doesn't apply. And they can give the justification of national security, or you're a criminal, or whatever reason. So you become a target. And at that point, this information, they can build a dossier on you, find embarrassing information that can be used to leverage you, or better way to say it, blackmail you. They're trying to shut you up. They're trying to intimidate you. See, that's the problem with this. That is a police state. That's a tyranny. And that's why people have resigned from the National Security Agency. Snowden is not the first person to resign. But he saw what happened to whistleblowers such as Bill Binney, Thomas Drake, and others. So he said, they're going to go after me no matter what. I can be totally innocent, not break the law, whistleblow the correct way, and they're still going to go after me. And that's what's happened. And that's the consequences of the Bush administration going after whistleblowers that weren't, that did not do anything illegal, but they sicked the Justice Department on them, and that's happened. So he said, listen, no matter what I do, they're going to do that. They're going to see what they're trying to do is discredit him. That's the first thing you want to do. And how are they doing? Well, he's a spy for the Chinese communists. He's a spy for Russia. He's turning all this information. I don't know. He might be. You see, that's the problem, and that's what they're relying on, because there's been a number of spies. And Snowden may or may not be a spy. If he was, it's a crazy way to do it. I will grant you he's done damage, but who has really done the damage is the people that in charge of the National Security Agency. They were not obeying their oath of office. They've betrayed it, and they are violating the American people's Fourth Amendment rights in a massive way, and this can be used at any future date until the information is destroyed to use it to get leverage on people. Blackmail and why? To intimidate you or maybe go after you. I was listening to an interview yesterday by Bill Binney, one of the early whistleblowers, and he makes a point. Some of this information is used in criminal cases where they'll give information about someone, point the law enforcement in the right direction, and what the law enforcement can't use this information caught, so they try to develop a parallel sources of the information. There's a lot of, it's a potential for massive abuse and turning the United States into a police state, a surveillance state. It is a secret surveillance security state today. But it's getting worse because the technology has been turned on the American people. And what Snowden did was turn the technology on the National Security Agency. Well, I spent more time than I wanted on this story, so enough for that. I won't try to cover this anymore, but I wanted you to update it because it is in the news. What I really wanted to talk about is this year we're celebrating not only 50 years of Beatlemania, but we've also had 50 years on the war on poverty, started under President Lyndon Baines Johnson, LBJ, where he was going to have a war on poverty to eliminate poverty. And as a result, we've had many welfare and entitlement programs set up, and it's continuing. The problem is the poverty rate has actually gone up. It was going down, really, for everybody until they started the war on poverty. And within a couple of years, poverty actually got worse. They grew government, and they grew it by putting in place various entitlement programs. And if you go to my website, my companion blog, really, or it's a website, for this program, namely promptpops.wordpress.com, below the links to the shows in my archive, I really came up with some interesting information. One was a timeline or history of major benefit programs that the federal government over, starting with Social Security in 1935 and continuing up to today with Obamacare in 2010, what have been some of the major government benefit programs? And there's a lot of them. There is definitely a lot of them. And what has been the impact, especially amongst in terms of jobs? Now, what was in the news and what I'm sort of somewhat going to update and expand on was, and the reason why I'm talking about this, the Congressional Budget Office came out with a report last Tuesday that has been in the news really all through Sunday and I think into this week. In the fact that initially, if you just took it at face value, it was an update of their estimate that they did in 2010 in terms of the impact on jobs and the cost of Obamacare. What happened was the initial estimate in 2010 was the impact on jobs, I want to say 800,000. It's either 600,000 or 800,000. I believe it's 800,000, would be the 10-year impact of Obamacare. It would discourage people to work, so you would have less people working, roughly 800,000. Now, through 2024, that the impact will be, and they broke it down. I have a link in my notes, and I'm looking for that right now. It's towards the, yes, it's Table 1, CBO's. Well, these were the May 2013 estimates of the effect. I need to get the updated one. I got the wrong report. I didn't do that intentionally. I was a little puzzled by the numbers, and that was the link. I was following a link. What I do is research it, go to a link, and I had a link to the PDF. Anyway, they did an update. And what got everyone's attention, and you'll hear the number 2.5 million jobs, they broke it down this way. By 2017, they do it yearly. They do a 10-year projection. What is the impact in terms of jobs? By 2017, 2 million people, fewer people will be working, 2 million. If you do it to 2021, it's 2.3 million. And if you do it to 2024, which is 10 years out, they're doing it 10 years out because we're in fiscal year 2014. So what's the impact on the next 10 years? That's why they're the Congressional Budget Office. And it's the impact not only on jobs, what's the impact on the deficit, what's the cost. The Republicans are saying, and I think true, that this is a job killer. I've been saying it for a lot of reasons, and I think these numbers are underestimating it. But the real bigger issue is they're really declaring war on work. We had the war on poverty. That has really not worked out. That has been more or less a failure. Now, many people were helped, and I'm sure some of those people got out of poverty, but many of them stayed, and now we're in the third, fourth generation of people that have been on one or more of these programs for most of their life. They never really rise up the ladder of success or career ladder. And what they do is they have low paying. If they have any job, it's a low paying. It's a part-time job. It's low paying. It usually involves low skill sets, manual labor. The problem is all these programs provide a disincentive for people to work. Because here's, you get in the situation where they want to work for somebody, but if they decide to take the job offer, they run the real risk, and actually it's not a risk, a certainty, that they're going to lose, for example, food stamps. They could lose food stamps. They could lose their subsidy for, if they're on the exchanges, they could lose, if they're really poor. Everything is a function of the poverty line. If they're 138% or less of the poverty line, they're on Medicaid, which is one, which by far is the biggest welfare program. And I do have a chart on that. And let me say, what are the big major, the big three in terms of entitlement and welfare programs? Two of them are entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare. But the third is Medicaid, and that's very much a welfare program, because that is paying for medical assistance or care to people that are poor, that are initially below the poverty line. And the poverty line changes every year, and it depends how many people are in the household, whether it's an individual or an individual and a number of children. I'm not going to get into that. But the big three are Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. But in terms of welfare, the biggie by far is Medicaid. And I thought I put a chart in, and I'm not seeing it. I'm kind of curious what happened. What I'm trying to make a point is this. You get people that are getting one or more of these programs, and they try to get a job, and they get an offer for a job, and they can make money at this. But here's the problem. If they accept the job, they're going to lose many, if not all, of these benefits. So it actually costs them, in terms of the benefits, one or more, in some cases all, and they end up without health insurance. It's a disincentive to work. And many people do this calculation. Some say, well, I'm not going to accept the job. yeah, I know it could lead to bigger and better things, but initially, my problem is I'm not going to have food stamps anymore. I'm not going to have Medicaid anymore. I'm not going to have subsidized health insurance if you're in that situation. It could, they might have housing assistance. There are a number of welfare programs, and I do have, it's at the very bottom. I found, now I remember where I put it. The very bottom I have from Wikipedia, a listing of the major welfare programs. Now, by far, the biggest is Medicaid. None of them really come close. The next one is food stamps, food, what commonly is referred to food stamps, but it's really, it's now called SNAP, or the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. To give you an idea, and this is for, and these are in millions of dollars. Well, I'm going to translate it into billions to keep it simple. Medicaid grants to the state by the federal government is approximately, for 2013, $266 billion. I'm rounding off to the nearest billion, $266 billion. So you can see, and that's the federal portion, the states typically match it. So by far, Medicaid, which provides medical care for those at or below the poverty level, is by far the biggest welfare program. Nothing even comes close. Next is food stamps, or SNAP, and that's $82 billion. Still a large program, and that's up quite a bit. 10 years ago, it was only $61.7 billion. Today, it's $82.6 billion. So it's up by over $20 billion. Following that is the Earned Income Tax Credit, the EITC. That's $55 billion. And right behind it, fairly close, is SSI, Supplemental Security Income, of $50 billion. And close to that is housing assistance, or vouchers, of $49.7 billion. Here's the key point. All of these programs are dramatically up, all of them, compared to 2003, if you go back 10 years, quite a bit. And I haven't listed their, the major ones here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There are nine major programs listed. With Medicare, the big four, well, there are really five major ones. The biggest by far is Medicaid. Then you have food stamps, or SNAP, the Earned Income Tax Credit, SSI, Supplemental Security Income, and then a housing assistance. Those are the big five, and they add up. And what I'm trying to say, and I've been saying this in a number of shows, is these both entitlements and welfare in the coming years will take every cent of taxes. Because on average, tax collections are about 18%, 18.2% of GDP. And that's a fairly good number. It stays, even though we've had higher rates, lower rates. And that's what the chart is showing. There's a nice yellow line. It shows current policy is on an unsustainable path. Absolutely. Because by 2050, not too long from now, when many of you will be retiring, the big three, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, will account for all the tax revenues, all of them. Now, what's the problem with that? What about all the other federal departments? You know, I'm for some government. I'm not an anarchist, nor I'm for no government. I'm for limited government. And why? By how limited? Yes, you'd have a Department of Defense. You would have a Department of Treasury to collect taxes. You would have a Department of Justice to prosecute lawbreakers and settle disputes, if you will. You'd have, after Treasury, Defense, and the Department of Justice, you need, and the DOD, you would need a Secretary of State. Those are the essential departments. All the others, with maybe one or two exceptions, or parts of other departments, really need to be shut down. We don't have the money for it. And so that is going to be squeezed, squeezed, and squeezed. Now, why is it going to be squeezed? Because interest rate costs are going to go up, up, and up. The debt bomb is going to explode. And you got to keep in mind, and I'm going to have a future show on this. For the last, starting in December of 2008, what has the Federal Reserve, the Central Bank of the United States, been doing? It has been manipulating the interest rates, namely the federal funds rates. And that's the overnight rate that banks lend to each another. You can't get the federal funds rate, but it's kept it at near zero at 25 basis points. Eventually, and sooner rather than later, the Fed is going to have to stop doing that. It's a bad idea, folks. I'm not against changing the federal funds rate if it reflects market conditions, but no one can convince me, not even the so-called geniuses, economists at the Fed, very intelligent people, very smart people, but not very wise people, because what they're doing is compressing or suppressing the interest rate. They're not independent. Why are they doing this? They're a creature of Congress. They got a report to Congress. But what they're doing is financing these deficits, trillion-dollar deficits for 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, and, 13 was $680 billion, actually less. But it's going to come back. It's going to go up back to over a trillion. You can't continue doing this. The national debt is over, today is over, the gross national debt is above the entire GDP, real GDP of the United States. So when the Fed, remember, one of the main missions of the Fed, besides being a lender of last resort, and that's one of its primary missions, and that's really to bail out banks that are in trouble but still solvent, one of its main missions is price stability. So when inflation comes back, and it has come back, not so much in consumer prices, but it has, it's really, you see it in asset bubbles, including stocks and bonds. And we've had bubbles. So what's going to happen is at some point in time, I think in the near future, I would recommend starting right now, they are going to gradually increase the federal funds rate. And as they do that, the cost to the federal government of financing its huge deficits. And remember, about 35 cents of every dollar that the government is spending today has to be financed. In other words, they have to go in debt. So as interest rates go back up, and they will be going back up, for major reason is the heating up of inflation. Remember, to quote Milton Friedman, the late great Milton Friedman, inflation is a, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have the exact quote, inflation is always, always a monetary phenomenon. In other words, the Fed are expanding, and they have, by buying the debt of the Treasury, they're expanding the money supply and they're expanding credit. At some point, that credit is going to be put to use and lent out to banks, and then you're going to lent out by banks to businesses and individuals, and then you're going to have, I really truly think this, a repeat of the 70s, where inflation will gradually start going up, up, and up. And when that happens, interest rates, the Fed is going to have to increase it's going to have to increase interest rates. And when that happens, the deficit is going to get bigger, and it's going to squeeze out, and that's the red section. And you can see interest gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So you have three. What's happening is all the other departments are going to be squeezed out. You got to pay everything. You got to pay for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and that's not all the welfare programs. But in addition to that, you have all the other federal departments, some of them crucial. So while there are some savings by permanently closing down departments, the one expense that you're going to have to pay is interest. So what they're going to be doing, very clearly, what they're going to be doing is expanding the money. They've already expanded the money supply, but interest rates are going to go up. And that's when the debt bomb at some point is going to blow up. I'm looking at the time. I'll continue on this story. There are some points that I really don't have time to cover yet. And I'm looking at the time. This is a good point to break. I got to save the file. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. So stay tuned to tomorrow. I'll have some other points on this story that'll amplify, and I'm sure there's going to be some breaking news. Thank you. Have a great day.